Good day and welcome to the Economic Policy Institute Surging Steel Report conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Scott Paul. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, and thank you for joining us. I am Scott Paul. I'm the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. We will have brief remarks from the conference call participants, including Senator Jeff Sessions, Senator Sherrod Brown, Elizabeth Drake of Stewart & Stewart, and Rob Scott of the Economic Policy Institute. I'll provide a brief overview and then introduce the speakers, starting with Rob. And I want to say that we're very thankful that Rob Scott and Elizabeth Drake were able to join us and were able to contribute so much to the report and to help crystallize this issue of a surge in steel imports and what it means to the everyday lives of workers around the country, and also to the profitability of American steel companies who are highly efficient right now. I just had very brief comments. I think one of the chief takeaways of this report is the dramatic amount of overcapacity that exists globally in the steel industry. We're at the same time, U.S. capacity utilization is still well below normal levels. The last time we saw a dynamic like this after the Asian financial crisis at the end of the 1990s, the result was very ugly. It was ugly for manufacturing. It was ugly for manufacturing workers. It was ugly for the steel industry when a lot of companies were forced into bankruptcy. One of the last lines of defense that the steel industry and workers have are trade laws. Unless these trade laws are effectively and aggressively enforced, America will see job loss and will see diminished capacity and reduced market share. If there is a message to deliver to the administration and to Congress today, I think it's that trade cheats should get no free pass, regardless of their status as a free trade partner of the United States, regardless of geopolitical factors. The law must be applied, and I think when it's applied, the facts overwhelmingly support the cases that have been brought forth. One of the other factors that I think makes this overcapacity and the pressures on domestic industry right now so painful is that we've had this promise over the last 5 years of more energy independence through exploration in natural gas and oil within the continental United States that should be creating a market for pipe and tube to aid in the transmission of and the extraction and the exploration of this oil and natural gas. Other countries have tried to enter the market with heavily subsidized steel or dump steel. China 5 or 6 years ago, South Korea, and other countries today. And it's turned this potential promise into a nightmare for the steel industry. What I don't think Americans counted on was trading a dependence on foreign steel for a dependence on steel pipe from countries like South Korea or China. I will now call on Rob Scott to briefly summarize the findings of the report. Dr. Scott is the Director of Trade and Manufacturing Policy Research at the Economic Policy Institute, and I want to commend Rob again for the amazing work that he and Elizabeth have done on this report. Rob?
Thank you, Scott. I'd like to introduce our report, which is called Surging Steel Imports, But 500,000 Jobs at Risk. It was co-produced by my group, the Economic Policy Institute, and Stewart & Stewart. The report shows that a worldwide glut of production capacity has plunged the U.S. steel industry into an import crisis. In the aftermath of the Great Recession, state-backed companies in China and South Korea, India, and elsewhere have increased steel production, even as demand has stagnated. The United States has become the prime target for manufacturers to unload excess steel supplies at below market rates. Since 2011, U.S. steel imports have surged and prices have plummeted, putting the U.S. steel industry and the 500,000 jobs it supports at risk. Put data into that story. Imports surged 12.3% between 2011 and 2013. And in the first 2 months of this year, in 2014, they increased an additional 24.5%. Meanwhile, the price of those imports has fallen dramatically. The average unit values of imported steel fell by $259 a ton, a decline of 23.1% between 2011 and the first two months of 2014. The steel industry is hugely important to the U.S. economy. It directly supports more than 500,000 jobs, and those jobs are in imminent danger. This import surge has led to sharp declines in income in the steel industry, layoffs for thousands of workers, and reduced wages for many more. As a result of the import crisis, the U.S. steel industry has had net losses of $388 million in 2012, $1.2 billion in 2013. In fact, it has seen net losses in four of the past 5 years. Up to 583,600 steel-related jobs are at risk if the United States does not fully and effectively enforce its trade remedy laws, which have historically been vital to the steel industry. And now Elizabeth Drake is going to tell us more about the causes of this crisis and what can be done about it. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Rob. And my name is Elizabeth Drake, and I'm a partner at the law offices of Stewart and Stewart. When we did our research to look into the causes of the massive overcapacity that's burdening the global steel market right now, there were a couple things that popped out at us. One is the enormous amount of state involvement in and state support for the steel industry in other countries. Over half of the world's largest steelmakers are state-owned, many but not all of those in China. And even those that aren't directly owned by the state enjoy a wide array of subsidies, including below-market rates on loans from government-owned banks, access to land and to key inputs and to energy at below-market rates, direct grants and equity infusions. The list goes on and on. So when these state-supported producers face a drop in demand in a recession or in other circumstances, unfortunately, they don't act in an economically rational manner and bring down their production or take inefficient capacity offline. Instead, they keep producing with aggressive government support and offload that excess production on the world market. And that's why we see in the steel industry these repeated cycles of crisis. The latest one is the one that's happening right now. The U.S. market, because it is so large and because it is so open, becomes the prime target for this excess production when global excess capacity peaks. We looked at the period from 2009 to 2012 and found that while steel imports in Europe rose only 22% during this post-recession crisis, steel imports into the U.S. more than doubled. So we are the attractive market. We are the prime target. When the crisis hits, there has been a wave of anti-dumping and countervailing duty petitions filed on steel products in the past year in response to this import surge. There have been 40 individual anti-dumping and countervailing duty petitions filed since January of last year. Determinations in most of those cases will be happening this year or early in 2015. The petitions cover products that are made by more than 14,000 workers in the U.S. across 29 states and 92 different towns and communities. So this is a massive wave of response to that really exposes the severity of the crisis the industry is facing. Our research also shows that effective enforcement of these trade remedy laws, actually allowing workers and companies to get the relief that's intended under the statute, is critical to the industry's survival. The last time the industry faced a similar crisis was in the wake of the Asian financial crisis in the late 1990s and early 2000s. And at that time, it was a safeguard relief that was absolutely essential to the industry's ability to adjust and to survive the wave of unfairly traded imports it was facing then. Those tools are equally critical today as the industry faces yet another import crisis. Our report concludes with some recommendations on how the administration and Congress and other policymakers should approach our trade remedy laws and the enforcement of those laws to ensure that they work as intended and provide workers in the steel industry with the relief that they need.
Thank you, Elizabeth, and thank you for all of the work that you've done on trade law enforcement. Right now, I want to call on the senators who have joined the call first. Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio. I was able to join Senator Brown in Lorain, Ohio about a week ago. There's a lot of jobs at stake in Ohio for the effective enforcement of trade laws and jobs that are connected directly to the steel industry, and there's no better advocate for those workers than Senator Brown. Senator Brown?
Scott, thank you. And also, Dr. Scott, thank you for joining us, and Ms. Drake, and especially my friend Jeff Sessions. And Jeff and I have worked on, Senator Sessions and I have worked on a number of issues that deal with American manufacturing, individual manufacturing issues and legislative issues. And we have together our bipartisan bill that would stand up for American manufacturers when countries like China manipulate their currency. We've known for generations that our steelworkers and manufacturers build this country. Much of that steel is produced in the two states of the two centers in this call, Alabama and Ohio. We're on the cusp in many ways of a manufacturing renaissance after 10 million job loss in manufacturing jobs, 5 million jobs lost in manufacturing from 2000 to 2010. We've seen a growth of some 500,000 manufacturing jobs in the last 4 or 5 years. We see signs of life in my state, new investments in manufacturing, natural gas boom, and part of the state is feeding this growth. Natural gas productions providing domestic manufacturers with an affordable and predictable energy source. This production's increased demand also for world-class tubular steel. 8,000 workers across the country make these OCTG, Oil Country Tubulars, steel goods. Each one of those jobs supports another 7 positions in the supply chain. We have an opportunity to grow the economy by investing in manufacturing, but our producers are increasingly losing business to competitors overseas that simply don't play by the rules. OCTG imports have doubled since 2008. By some measures, imports account for more than 50% of the pipes being used by companies drilling for oil and gas in the United States of America. Manufacturing drives the economy, but our manufacturers can't compete when the playing field is not level. We need to ensure that other nations do not unfairly dump steel in the U.S. market. It hurts our workers, it hurts our communities, it hurts our small businesses, it hurts our country. It's time to stop. This new report shows that America's steel industry risks long-lasting damage, including putting 583,000 steel-related jobs at risk, 35,000 in my state, unless the U.S. government fully enforces its trade remedy rules. And we know what happens when there's damage to an industry because of foreign trade. Those industries sometimes never recover because of what happens when those jobs go overseas. That's why I'm urging the Department of Commerce to make sure their final ruling accurately reflects the dumping of OCTG by South Korea and other nations into our market. Later this week, I'll be releasing a letter signed by dozens of my colleagues urging Commerce to act. Korea is one of the world's largest steel industries, but not one foot of its product, this is really important to understand, not one foot of its product is sold in Korea. It has no domestic OCTG market. So their producers export large volumes to the U.S., who are still by far the most open and attractive market in the world, at below market prices. Clear evidence that our workers and manufacturers are being cheated. my bipartisan legislation with Senator Sessions to crack down on currency manipulation would treat currency manipulation as an unfair trade subsidy. It would require the Commerce Department to investigate that manipulation. EPI and AAM argued in a report issued last year that 250,000 Ohio jobs could be created if currency manipulation were eliminated by next year. Our workers are some of the best in the world. That's why we're making a manufacturing comeback. When jobs are lost due to cheap flooded imports, and we need to do all we can to stop this practice and protect our workers. Thank you, and I'm pleased to join with Senator Sessions again. And Scott, thank you, and Ms. Drake, and Dr. Scott, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Brown, and thank you for your leadership on behalf of Ohio steel companies, Ohio workers, and your leadership on this letter. It is now my honor to turn to another Senate leader on defending American manufacturing and insisting on a level playing field, and as Senator Brown indicated, one of his colleagues on currency manipulation as well, the leader on that. And that's Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, also a state that has a significant steel industry and a major amount of jobs at stake here. Senator Sessions, thanks for your leadership and look forward to your remarks.
Thank you, Scott, and Sherrod, great to be with you again. And Senator Brown is very alert to these issues, and it's been good for me to have his insight and work with him on several of these issues. Look, we are in a very competitive world marketplace. We've got trading partners who sell billions of dollars in products to the United States and buy very, very little from us. And they see us as a big, fat market that they can exploit when they're in trouble and keep their plants going and their wages and their employees working. So I think we have a clear national interest in insisting that all trade be fair, that it be done according to the rules, and we not have our workers and businesses subjected to dumping of products below cost that can end up sending a private company that has to survive in the marketplace under, so they can't survive against this kind of effort. So I think we're on we need to stand up and defend ourselves. We've got 15 million more people in America today than in 2007, 8 million more people today in the working age group, yet we have fewer people working today than we had in 2007. The day that we can turn away and ignore unfair competition is over. We comply with international trade rules, and we need to expect our trading partners to comply also. I believe that a good case has been put forth in this report to establish violations of trade law, and I think it's important for the government to defend our manufacturers and our workers. So thank you, Scott, for your leadership here. We have 13,000 jobs at risk in Alabama. That's very big for our state. And each one of those deserves to know that its government is analyzing what's happening in the marketplace and will defend them if our trading partners are not complying with the rules. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Sessions, and thanks again for your leadership. I will have the call operator come on and instruct the media on how to queue up for a call. I did want to add that one of the startling facts I found in this report was that our private sector companies, as Senator Sessions, Senator Brown's indicated, have to compete in the private sector in a global marketplace. There are over half the world's top 46 steel companies are state-owned, and they account for almost 40% of global steel production. That was one of the findings of this report. And that's a whole lot of state intervention in the steel industry that our private sector companies have to compete with, which is why we depend on those trade laws. So, conference operator, if you'd come on and instruct folks how they can queue up to ask a question.
Absolutely. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you'd like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please be sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, please press star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause for a moment to assemble the queue. And once again, that is star 1 to ask a question. And we'll take our first question from Krista Hughes with Reuters.
Thank you. Thank you for the report and for hosting this call. Senator Byrne, could I just ask you, how many senators did you say had signed the letter which you're planning to send to Commerce? And also, that they gave no reason in their preliminary decision for not including Korea. Have you been briefed on the reason for their preliminary ruling?
Thanks for the question. There will be dozens. We don't have a final count yet, but we've seen great interest from both parties. As we've increasingly seen on trade issues, on trade agreements, and especially on trade enforcement, I think the bipartisan consensus here is growing, as evidenced from when Senator Sessions and I work on any of these bills. We have a number of our colleagues in both parties that want to help. They have looked at – we don't believe that the Commerce Department has looked at this the same way that our government looked at the China case. And there are, in terms of costs, in terms of what Korea has done, they use a low end product intended for the construction market that will necessarily lead to a different dumping determination than using a high end OCTG product. But it's we believe Commerce needs to utilize every tool it has access to that so we can give workers a fair chance to compete. We don't think they've done that on the preliminary ruling. We are giving them information, as others are in the steel industry, about why that decision was not complete.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from John Miller with the Wall Street Journal.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I was talking to manufacturers and distributors of steel this morning, and often lost in these questions, I think, is the fact that these are American companies who are buying steel and making higher profits because of the less expensive foreign steel they're able to buy. I don't want to get into a debate on free trade on this call, but I'm curious as to whether you've heard from them and what you've told them if and when. Here in Pittsburgh, a lot of gas companies who want their pipe and tube to be as cheap as possible. So I'm curious what the dialogue has been like with them. Is there any sense that the oversupply problem might have a solution in the U.S. too? That capacity, steel capacity, might be too high here. Clearly, there is global capacity, but are you saying that all of that has to be reduced outside the U.S. Thanks, guys.
Sheriff Brown here. That's the argument that people always use, but we know a couple of things. First of all, we know that that drilling firm in the Marcellus Shale is a profitable business already. It can be very profitable when they're profitable if they're using U.S. steel from Lorain or Valoric. Valoric steel from Youngstown or any number of other companies in this country. And it's a little bit like arguing that it's okay for people to buy stolen TVs just because they're cheaper. I mean, if they're breaking international law, which South Korea is by their dumping of steel, there's a reason for the rule of law. It keeps the worldwide trading system fair and honest. That's why you enforce these rules. So this industry will be profitable. The ultimate steel users here at slightly higher prices that they will pay because they're not buying a product that was illegally made in South Korea.
Have you heard from them?
John?
We've talked to them. We've talked to everybody about these cases.
I have in the past heard from purchasers of steel that they like the lower prices, which is what their stockholders and their board rightly expect them to do, is to look for the lowest possible price. But we're not in a free market. I think it's all been reported, we got about half of the foreign steel production to be government-owned or controlled industry. So our people are struggling to get by in a competitive marketplace, and they can't have unfair competition. And America will not be better, and our national security will not be enhanced if we further hammer the American steel industry and reduce it. So I think the ideal of trade is correct, and I support that, but I don't think the single overriding goal must always be the lowest price product for people in America. I understand that argument. I said on the floor during this debate last time, the Wall Street Journal says we should send them a thank you note for sending us below cost products.
That's the other side of the other side of this operation.
So that's but I can't go that far, because I don't think we're going to be better off as a nation if our people are unfairly competed against, and if that's not establishable, then they can't get relief. So they have to establish that there's an unfairness here.
Okay, thank you, Senators.
And we'll now take our next question from David Thomas with Inside U.S. Trade.
Hi, thank you for taking my question, and thank you for holding this call. I guess I have kind of like a two-part question, really, kind of dealing with kind of, moving forward from here. I mean, I guess this is for both the senators and for, I guess, the report authors. I mean, have any of you kind of considered maybe kind of recommending a domestic, like, preference program for steel, kind of having, like, some kind of program in place that would promote using U.S. steel for these projects? I mean, at what point do you think the industry would have to get to before, you know, that kind of, that kind of solution would be considered?
I can do this first, I guess. I'm not sure where your question leads. I think we can, you know, Senator Sessions and I can stand on the Senate floor and exhort our private steel companies in our state, I mean our private end users, to buy U.S. steel, American steel, but they're going to buy the lowest price steel as long as the quality is good. We understand that. Where we come in, and so I don't know that our doing that really means much, other than appealing to patriotism. But the role we can play is our Buy America provisions. We've gotten in a number of bills that are now law. The government doesn't always, and I've seen this as Jeff has in administration after administration, the government doesn't always enforce these Buy America provisions as well as they should. And that's an ongoing battle. But when there are tax dollars at work, and there's procurement, whether it's clothing or whether it's steel, we should be buying American, because these are our jobs and our taxpayer-paying goods.
I guess the second part of my question then is, what exactly are you kind of advocating in terms of, like, policy corrections? The report does mention how, like, you know, and it's been mentioned on this call, that Commerce needs to do more to kind of, like, I guess, enforce the law, and that there's also mentioned too within this report talking about how, well, perhaps maybe there seems to be suggestions that the underlying laws for trade remedies and finding injury at the ITC perhaps need to be changed, but again, nothing specific. I was just wondering exactly what kind of policy recommendations will you be pushing in terms of changing, you know, trade remedy law or injury law?
Senator Brown again, Sherrod Brown again. We're doing, I think Jeff's and my currency issue is the most important change. We also are very active and aggressive working with American companies and enforcing trade rules whenever they come to us. But the problem here is, and we saw this in my state in the coated paper industry, where 15 years ago China didn't even have an industry. They created one. They buy their pulp in Brazil. They ship it to China. They mill it in the east coast of China. They ship it back to the U.S. They undercut our manufacturers of paper. When they can do that with paper, you know they're clearly not playing fair on trade. But the damage, by the time the industry can prove damage, it's often too late. It was in that industry. That industry is not nearly as strong and deep as steel. So they were not able, in many cases, many companies went out of business because we couldn't move fast enough on these. That's the importance of the currency legislation, is that it automatically it washes across every industry, both in terms of our exports to China. They're too expensive because they manipulate their currency, and their imports to the United States, their exports here that we import, they undercut our ability to compete because what happens with price when they game their currency system. So that's why fundamentally that's the most important thing we can do here. We hope to get, Jeff and I are working with leadership in both parties to try to get something to the floor sometime this summer, early fall, and moving on this. We passed in the Senate overwhelmingly before, not successful in getting Speaker Boehner to schedule it, but we're going to keep trying.
Well, I was just going to say, on the currency question, we were told that China was going to increase its currency. But it is, any trend in that direction has been reversed, and it appears it's because they want to be able to export more. So when you have currency control on top of the ability to have state-owned industries with social and political goals in addition to financial goals, then it makes it impossible for a legitimate, well-run American steel company to compete. Labor is not that high, not that big a part of the cost of steel, and I think we can compete fine in an effective way if the playing field is level.
And in regards, I'm sorry, I just want to make sure I got this correctly, Senator Brown. You said that you're hoping to have some action on your currency bill in the summer?
We hope so, yeah. Don't know yet.
Okay.
It's Scott Paul at AAM here. I wanted to add on your other question about preferences or country of origin. I mean, some states have actually considered or have enacted requirements, Pennsylvania for sure, and Ohio is considering one, for transparency on country of origin for the pipe used in shale exploration, citing, I mean, safety. It's a lot easier to deal with a company that's in the United States than it is one in Korea or China. And then just to echo what the senator said on the broader issue here, you know, this administration has an aggressive export strategy to double exports over the next 2 years. In fact, I think, or try to double exports. Secretary Pritzker was just refreshing that this week. But what they lack is any strategy to deal with this overcapacity. And short of kind of tongue lashings, there's been no other response other than responding to petitioners on trade cases. And to me, from the outside, that's completely inadequate, which is why I'm glad Senator Sessions, Senator Brown are pushing the currency legislation, are making their voices heard to try to ensure we have more effective trade law enforcement.
And our next question will come from Finley Lewis from Congressional Quarterly.
Thank you for the call. Slightly off the topic, but not really. There are now two anti-dumping cases involving both sugar and steel from Mexico. I would be surprised if that was a currency manipulation issue. Senator Brown, I wonder if you could address what the underlying unifying cause of that situation might be and kind of remedy would be appropriate.
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Sorry. I can get back to you on it. I just don't know enough about that, those two cases, to be able to answer. I apologize.
Or Senator Sessions, you?
I'm not aware of those, the facts on those two cases either.
But
maybe the report would indicate to, on some of the trade issues we're dealing with, how much of a concern is currency and how much of a concern is dumping. But I don't have the technical data on that.
And we'll now take our next question from Lynn Boslovic from Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Hi, this is for anyone who feels the need to respond. Imports have been an issue for 30 years. The amount of damage they've done on the shrinking U.S. steel industry is pretty much evident. I know some of these things are out of policymakers' control, but why hasn't more been done, and does that indicate there's a need for a sort of a broad overhaul of these regulations?
I don't feel like I should take every question, but I'll do this one briefly. I've been part of most trade fights in the last 20 years here, and you know, the elite of this country, in this country, some of the most prominent economists, too often the leaders in both parties, too often presidents of both parties, subscribe. They you know, you see other nations practice trade according to their national interest, and the elite in this country tell us to practice trade according to an economics textbook that's 20 years out of print. And I think that we don't stand up for our national interests well. Ask them why they, in the end, don't. But they make the case every trade agreement in opposition to trade enforcement that this is good for our country. This will create jobs. I was going to say it never does. I guess I'd more safely say it rarely does. And yet we keep doing the same thing over and over. So pretty clear to me that the people in charge far too often in both parties have sold us short.
I would just follow up on that to say, you know, when the American economy was so dominant, people, these matters seemed to be given less attention by the elites, I think it's fair to say. But the American steel industry has gone through very tough times. They are far more productive than they were before. Every job in this economy today that's earned and legitimate ought to be defended against unfair competition. That's what I think. And if we do this right, we can weaken the amount of money we have to lessen the amount of money we have to spend on welfare, support, aid, create more tax revenue, more growth, more productivity. In the long run, you'll maintain a healthy American steel industry that will result in lower cost. But if we decimate the American steel industry, our costs are not going to go down.
Then we'll take our next question from Sandra Snowden with the Construction Today.
It's Scott. I just wanted to add before the question, I think this will have to be the last question because of some time constraints we have for the parties on the call, but we can also follow up individually afterwards as well.
And Sandra, your line is open.
Okay, thank you, and thanks to everyone not only for this eye-opening report, but for the comments that have been said today. We are a publication, a company that has over 22 publications covering Manufacturing Today, Construction Today, and Energy and Mining and Energy Infrastructure, and those are the publications that I'm here on the conference call for. About a year and a half ago, Scott Paul may remember that we did a whole issue on Manufacturing Today on Buy America with the United Steelworkers and with several corporations, and Scott Paul added his comments, you know, especially to the Buy America trade that was happening. Comments that were made here today that we are looking at state-owned steel companies in other countries. If I go back to our Buy America White Elephant, why that report was done, it was for China on structural steel mainly, and it was our U.S. taxpayer dollars that built the steel company in China, if I recall, that then sent, you know, the steel back for the Bay Bridge. That's a major concern for a Buy America to take our tax dollars out to buy a facility in another country and use their workers, and that is what Manufacturing Today stood up for. I'm concerned on this side, now that we're talking about is We were talking, and there was earlier, I guess, the Wall Street Journal gentleman who said, what about our American companies that had the opportunity to buy America or to buy American steel, and they're choosing a not lesser quality because we haven't discussed the quality issue, we've only discussed the price issue. Why are those companies, if they are breaking trade laws, if these countries are breaking the laws, why aren't our American companies being fined? Why aren't we holding them more than patriotism? Why are we not holding them accountable under the trade law for doing business with these steel companies? And I'd also just like to ask a question here. We're talking about the steel industry, but in particular the tubular steel industry. I'm wondering on the figures that have been brought forward, are we also considering the structural steel and the construction industry that loses out so much to commercial buildings that are buying from wholesale distributors, steel from other countries, including our World Trade Center?
Good questions. Rob Scott, would you like to just briefly touch on the categories of steel that are covered in this report? Because I do believe it does include all steel categories. Is that correct?
Yes and no, actually. We looked at the jobs supported by the production of steel in the United States. And that includes some construction jobs and others. It's more difficult to capture the effects of dependence on imports on steel-using industries like construction, like agricultural machinery, like automobiles and parts production. To some extent, if we lose the steel industry, then the argument for location of some of those industries here in the United States is going to become weaker. We could lose the industries as well, as some of the research may move offshore to chase the producers of steel industry, so steel production. So I think the estimate of 583,000 jobs at risk is actually quite conservative. It could be much larger.
Great.
We're not saying they broke that American purchasers of this steel are breaking the law. They're not breaking the law. They're going to the market and buying the steel. So I don't point fingers at them. I wish they would buy American, but they're looking, as Jeff said, at the lowest price. It's up to us to enforce these laws so Korean companies and government can't break the laws. It's up to us to do that.
Great. Thank you. Senator Brown, thank you so much. Senator Sessions, thank you. Thank you, Rob Scott. Thank you, Elizabeth Drake. And if you need to follow up the report, the reporters, you can get in touch with the media outreach contact. We also have, on the EPI website, a great interactive version of the report at epi.org. I just want to thank you all for your time today, and thank Senator Brown, Senator Sessions, again, for your leadership on this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation.